I'm Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. What is the best way to raise a child? There are so many different opinions on the subject. The type of parenting that I believe in is called attachment parenting. If you are interested in attachment parenting, a wonderful resource is a Holistic Moms Network. Joining us today to share her personal experiences and beliefs about attachment parenting is Mayim Bialik, actress and celebrity spokesperson for the Holistic Moms Network. Mayim Bialik captured our hearts playing the young Bette Midler in Beaches, but is best known for her lead role as Blossom Russo in the early 1990s NBC sitcom Blossom. This fall, Mayim joined the cast of ABC's Family's A Secret Life of the American Teenager in a recurring role as a high school guidance counselor, and she recently guest starred on Fox's Till Death. Mayim has also had guest roles on Curb Your Enthusiasm and HBO's Fat Actress. Mayim attended UCLA, where she received an undergraduate degree in neuroscience, Hebrew and Jewish studies. She went on to receive her doctorate from UCLA in neuroscience, focusing on Prader-Willi syndrome. Mayim, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Thank you. I haven't heard that many things about myself in a long time.
I have to say, I love Curb Your Enthusiasm. It must have been fun.
Yeah, it was scary. You know, it was very intimidating. It's a very well-established cast who's obviously some of the best improv people, you know, on mm-hmm. television. And improv is not my strength, so I have very little to do, but they kept bringing me back, which was nice.
I mentioned in the introduction about attachment parenting, and if you can tell us about that, and then we'll get into talking about the Holistic Moms Network and all the cool stuff you're doing right now.
Sure. I mean, you know, attachment parenting is a very broad term that includes a lot of things that many people do when they practice attachment parenting and some things that not all of us do. The basic idea, and, you know, Dr. Sears is a very well-known, you know, pediatrician and child developmentalist who discusses attachment parenting. The idea is to basically look to how people raise children for almost all of human history, except for the past about 200 years, and see what worked for people. And what that normally looked like and what it looks like in the animal kingdom, and we are animals, is being close to your child, especially being close to your baby, sleeping in close proximity to your baby, nursing on demand, facilitating everything that leads to nursing on demand, which often means an unmedicated birth. What else? Carrying your baby close to you in preferably a, you know, comfortable sling. A lot of people who practice attachment parenting don't do all those things.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us, you know, there are those among us who have scheduled C-sections and who don't nurse and all those things. And attachment parenting is not meant to be a judgmental style of parenting, but rather, you know, a forum for a discussion about what keeps babies happiest. And, you know, I often speak to people who have just had a baby, and they say, gosh, every time I put it down, it starts crying. I say, well, I guess it's telling you not to put it down. And that's not to say that people who practice attachment parenting are martyrs and that we don't have lives and we have nothing better to do than sit home and, you know, hold a sleeping baby. But many educated and well-researched people make a conscious choice to, you know, have child-centered and infant-centered parenting because it works for our families. Not because it gets us to the movies and to martinis with our girlfriends quickly, because it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
But we see the benefits, and we see children who are securely dependent on us and securely attached. And it doesn't work for every family, but I will say that it works for my kids, and the temperament that they have is very well suited to this style of parenting. So that's sort of the general attachment parenting.
Well, you know, I like that you said securely. I think it's great, and I like that you said securely attached because I think people imagine that if you are that attached, the child's going to have separation issues. You know, when I bring my daughter to preschool now, she literally, she can't wait for me to leave. She's like, okay, see ya.
Sure.
But she has that sense of love and connection.
Sure, and you will see all different temperaments of kids who are, you know, parented this way and kids who aren't parented this way. There's so many other factors, you know, that lead to why kids are a certain way. And, you know, I've been in rooms with, you know, people where the attachment parenting, you know, dyad or triad of the family looks really, you know, different to me than my family.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because there are different things to every family. So it's not to say that, you know, people who practice attachment parenting have figured out how to raise the perfect child, but, you know, organizations like La Leche League International, they have shown that you can parent this way and raise very independent, very sensitive, and very intelligent creatures that are not what people think they will be. They're not spoiled. They don't feel entitled. You know, we often report the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, it's interesting you brought up the part about Gene being judgmental. I'm very honest on the show, and I have to work on that. I remember when my daughter was about 6 months old, and I was, you know, of course, had her in a sling, and I was holding her. I was at, you know, a little, you know, afternoon party or something. And there was the woman there, and literally her baby sat in the car seat for like 3 hours. So up to her and say, "Excuse me, but you haven't touched your baby in 3 hours."
No,
I thought, you know what?
No,
it's not my place.
Correct. And I, you know, I was that person as well. And when my first son was born, I made friends with someone who ended up being diagnosed with cancer when our infants were about 3 months old. And she had to wean overnight and begin chemotherapy.
My goodness.
And from that day on, I knew that I would never judge a woman who I saw giving formula to a child, because you never know.
That's true.
And I don't mean to be a downer, but it profoundly changed the way I judged other people, because when I see someone with a car seat carrier, I think, you know what, maybe they had a terrible accident and they cannot hold their baby because their spine was broken in three places. I really try and open up my concept of what I think. If someone specifically asks me, "Do you think I should carry my baby like this and not touch them for 3 hours?" I'll be happy to give you my, you know, not humble opinion.
Yes.
But if you're asking me, you know, as a general statement, do I know how you should raise your kid? I promise I don't.
Yeah. Like, you have to be open-minded and realize that things happen.
And also, I think it's important to make sure that we don't take anecdotal instances and generalize them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yes, one woman may have a problem producing milk,
yes,
but there are so many factors that go into why and how our bodies do produce milk.
Yeah.
And anything that is stressful in the birth, any extra exhaustion, lack of fluids, so many things, other emotional or psychological factors, those all go into milk production.
And isn't there like certain, I think, is it thistle, or there was some kind of, I don't remember.
There's herbs. I mean, look, oats, you know, oats historically can bring milk supply up. Obviously, you know, beer, but you have to be careful about that. But, you know, you can drink non-alcoholic beer as well. But, yeah, there are foods, there are herbs, but really, the most recommended thing to do, as I said, which the Leche League will tell you, is to be skin-to-skin with your baby as much as possible.
Yes.
Convince your body that all your body needs to do is make more milk, meaning have the child with you all the time. You know, there's things that you can do. But obviously, you know, some people do supplement, and you can also supplement with, you know, donated breast milk, too.
That's something I was saying, too, that I think is really important is, you know, there are milk banks. And I
there
think
are.
That if it's
there
a
are
good...
also non-paying milk banks that are more like, you know, matchmakers for people who have milk and people who need milk.
Oh, yeah, I'm totally into that. And some people think that's wacky, but I think that's great.
I donate milk to someone that way, so...
Yeah, no, I actually had for my child, I had a friend that helped out. I was having a really hard time, and I think I'd had all those things, stress and not sleep.
Sure.
And my milk production wasn't great, but I never gave up, and I held her all the time. I did everything, and again, she weaned when she was three. She looked at me and said, "You know, I've had enough." And I wanted to talk about the Holistic Moms Network, and I read on their website, which is wonderful. You write, quote, "When I tried to go to a mom's group run by a local kids' gym, my first son was 3 months old. I left in tears. I did not want to learn how to leave my baby all night, how to get him to stop nursing, how to control his manipulation. I wanted to learn how to cook and nurse him at the same time. I wanted his cloth diapers not to leak. I wanted him to use the potty. I wanted to develop our attachment 24/7. I'd almost given up hope when a friend who turned me into a home birth years before told me she found a Holistic Moms Network in her town. I called Holistic Moms Network that day and have been a faithful member ever since." That's so great. Because it is really hard. I felt very isolated with some of the choices I was making.
Yeah, I mean, I felt isolated. I felt judged. You know, I felt like a total freak, you know. People thought I was nuts to not care that the baby wanted to be held all the time, or that I wanted to make my own baby wipes so I didn't have to, you know, keep buying disposables.
Yeah.
People really, you know, that's not what most people are doing. At least, you know, in Los Angeles here. And it's kind of funny to be the, you know, celebrity spokesperson for this organization. I've been a member, you know, for 4 years, and it's only in the last year that You know, I've been their spokesperson, but it's kind of the easiest gig around because I've been a member and believe very strongly in what they're doing. It's a nonprofit. We have over 100 chapters nationwide. And for people who read Mothering Magazine or who are members of the Leche League, this is basically the mom's group for you.
Oh, that's great.
It is a support organization. We do play dates and field trips. And, you know, there's a Yahoo group, so it's also a place where you can post, you know, does anyone know how to strip diapers? Mine are smelling funny. And you get answers, you know, the answers to all those things. But there is, again, there's a wide variety of people in Holistic Moms Network. In our chapter, we were moms and dads of all shapes, sizes, colors, and backgrounds. It's not a wealthy, you know, WASPy, elitist organization. We had adoptive families. We had breastfeeding families. We had non-breastfeeding families. Really, people from all walks of parenting, but the emphasis is on learning about how to parent in a kind of holistic and often green way. And there's also a strong emphasis on what we put into our bodies and into our children's bodies. So there are a lot of people who know a lot about organic foods and local produce and also how to green your house and your baby care, meaning not use toxic products in your home and on your baby.
Oh, that's great. Well, I recently did an interview with a wonderful woman named Annie Bond from National Geographic, and she wrote a great book called True Foods, and it's all about eating locally and organic and about canning and freezing.
A lot of us, you know, we happen to have my kids are vegan, and I am as well. My husband's vegetarian, reluctantly, but he is. and, you know, it's something that some of us choose to include in our parenting style and in our world philosophy. But again, Holistic Moms Network is not a vegetarian or vegan organization. They don't, you know.
We talked last time a little bit about elimination communication. If you just tell us a little bit about that and how that ties in with the attachment parenting.
Sure. I mean, obviously not everyone who practices attachment parenting wants their child to use an infant potty.
Yeah, I didn't even know about this until we spoke last time, and I thought I was, like, all about attachment.
Kind of a diaper-free, you know, we kind of call it a diaper-free movement, but the actual term is elimination communication, and, you know, people all over the world have their children, quote, potty trained well before Western standards, and, you know, you could say a lot of disparaging things about, well, most countries are filthy and, you know, blah, 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 but, you know, the fact is there is a wisdom that women for and men for a long time have noted that babies are actually born giving some signals when they go to the bathroom. And if you reinforce those signals positively and do not associate misses, we don't call them accidents, if you don't associate misses with anything punitive or with negativeness, babies at a very young age will learn to give stronger signs for when they go to the bathroom so that you can get them on a potty. And, you know, I learned a lot mainly from going to a place called the EC Store, which is like theecstore.com. And it's a whole resource for people who want, you know, to have supplies to put their kids on a potty. And we used cloth diapers, you know, while our son was learning. So when we'd go out, you know, he'd be in cloth diapers. And we use a little kind of a belt where like a cotton pre-fold diaper just tucks in for easy, like, taking on and off. And they make tiny undies because when our son was, 14 months old, he was ready to be wearing undies.
That's
we just
incredible.
Got tired of opening and closing a cloth diaper. He exclusively, pretty much, will go to the bathroom in a potty. And, you know, for anyone who's fed a baby solids and had to clean a diaper, it's not fun, and I'm happy to say that this was part of our motivation. We've only had to do that, you know, maybe once or twice in his life, once he was eating solids, if we had a miss. But it's pretty incredible. I mean, it's not only for those reasons that people do it. You know, we absolutely can report a very, very, you know, interesting sense of closeness and intimacy when you meet this need of your babies and of your child. They get it. They can learn to use a potty. It's not, again, it's not punitive. We don't do rewards. We don't cheer. There's no treats or charts or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's very interesting, and my husband thought I was nuts.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
He told me I was putting distance between him and his child. He could never hold him. And now he is the biggest advocate. And he will tell the most conventional friends of ours, you guys have to read this book. I promise you, you have to do this. And most people do not, you know, have an interest in it. You have to be with your child a lot. I mean, you have to reinforce those signals, meaning you're with them all the time. But we have found it very gratifying and a very interesting way of parenting, because we really have not had to fight with our children about a lot of things that other people often find themselves fighting with their kids about, meaning, you know, we don't sleep train, so they kind of nurse all night till they're done, and we hold them when they want to be held, and we feed them when they seem ready. They do go to bed like normal kids. They go to bed at 6:30, and, you know, we have a life with a lot of boundaries, but found that not fighting with them about the potty and things like that has been worth the extra effort to put in. And as most people who do attachment parenting will tell you, it does feel like a lot more work in the first few years. But for most of us, it does pay off and something we love. So. And you will need to struggle with your two-month-old, you know, to convince them that they don't need you at night, which they will tell you very loudly that they do. but again, it's a personal choice, and I speak to a lot of women, you know, and a lot of dads and a lot of friends of ours who say, I'm done, you know, it was enough. And I have to say, you know, they sleep train or they make those choices, and that is what they want to do. But it, you know, absolutely didn't sit right with me and my husband in our soul. We know that our kids need to be with us at night, you know.
Yeah, well, there was, I think Ferber came out, actually, and said a few years ago that he was wrong, that you shouldn't Ferberize your kids.
It's like there will still be people who say, you know what, I'm the parent and I get to decide.
That's true.
And it makes me sad because
I can't tolerate
my kids screaming for, you know, for very long when they're expressing a need. We're not talking like they want three cookies and I'm only giving them two.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true. That's a different story. Now, I'm always telling my daughter, it's okay to feel your feelings. You're not always going to have your way, but you need to feel your feelings and let it out, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like part of the holistic parenting, too, I think, is looking at taking the child's emotions and not just telling them, this is how you feel, but listening to what they have
to
say.
I mean, I was raised by, you know, two very lovely, interesting people. But I was told when I was hungry, and I was told when I was cold, and I was told when I had a right to be upset. And you know, I say that in all kindness to my parents.
Of course.
They were raised in the middle of World War II, and that's what parenting looked like then. It looked like, I'll tell you when I'll touch you. You know, I'll tell you when I'll pick you up. And so my parents really did better by me than I think was done by them. But a lot of people are looking at it and saying, huh. You know, maybe child-centered parenting is not such a bad idea, meaning what are your needs? And, you know, I get to protect you, and I get to set boundaries, and I get to give you limits, because children do need those. But, you know, I believe my son when he says he's not hungry. And if I put, you know, his starches and his greens in front of him and he feels like eating starches, I guess it was a starch day, you know? but that is a big part of the Holistic Moms Network, is also educating about, you know, what we call gentle discipline or positive discipline, which encourages boundaries and structure, but does not encourage, you know, hitting or, you know, punishment.
Not.
And some people do timeouts. We happen to be a family that does not. But I'm assuming if I, quote, needed to, I would do something like that. But yeah, gentle discipline has been actually, when I'm interviewed for kind of green things, you know, Sierra Club interviewed me, they say, what's the parenting thing that you think is the most important, you know, to create green children? And I say gentle discipline, because once you teach children that you have compassion for them and that you will not rule them by force, they learn that they have to carry that into the world, and we don't get to rule the world by force either.
Yeah, that's a great question. God, they're really on top of it.
I know. Sierra Club was asking hard stuff.
Oh, that's a good. That's really important. And you know, I am so happy that you came back on, because this is such good information. And you're just—I mean, my husband and I saw you. Well, I had known who you were. He didn't watch, you know, Blossom in the '90s and stuff. But he saw you on What Not to Wear, and he was so impressed. He's like, she is so smart and interesting. And
thank you.
Yeah, he was so, he became a big fan after that. And that whole experience seemed like fun. I would love to go on that show.
Yeah.
How was that for you?
You know, it's hard. I mean, it's hard to put yourself out there. It's hard to reveal parts of yourself, you know, as you're presenting yourself as a celebrity as well. You know, the true me is that I'm now in, you know, nursing pajamas and a totally ratty pajama shirt and socks that look like Converse shoes. Those are my shoes socks. You know, like, that's really what I look like.
I hear you.
And on a daily basis, you know, I really look like most moms, if not worse.
Yeah, me too.
So, you know, now that I'm kind of acting again and working again, it's been putting a different face on myself and, you know, kind of walking that fine line. I don't think I should have to be sexy and whatever, but, you know, that is part of my job, you know.
Yes.
Part of my job is to be who the people who, you know, write me checks want me to be, you know, to some extent. And I have certain limitations around that. I don't wear pants and stuff like that. But, you know, it's interesting. It's a very interesting industry, especially when you're a super crunchy, you know, hippy-dippy granola mama like me.
Oh, you're really crunchy, but I love eye makeup. I love, you know, I wish the 60s would come back, you know, with that girl. I love eyelashes and thick eyeliner.
When our first son was born, we realized we were probably never going to go to the movies together again, so we bought a really large television.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, like, a 52-inch television, and we watch movies on it when, you know, the kids are sleeping, and it's like our own little, you know, sort of movie theater in our tiny house.
Uh-huh.
But no one should have to see themselves that big. You know, Secret Life is all about the close-up and the, you know, I mean, I'm a character actress. I'm trained in sitcom, you know. Like,
yes.
I do a lot of reaction shots that don't need to be seen that big by anyone, except my parents, who think I'm, you know, always fantastic. But also, you know, you mentioned I have a recurring role on Till Death, which is the show with the guy who used to be on Everybody Loves Raymond.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I just had my first show of that, and I'll post on my Facebook page the next two episodes.
Oh, great.
But sitcom lighting is much more forgiving, and I was much happier with how I looked in sitcom lighting. You know, Secret Life, it's drama, and it's close-up, and, again, like, it was, to me, it was just, like, too much eyebrow, too much everything.
Oh, see, I love
Thank you. Well, it's a lot of, like, hair. It's a lot more than I'm used to. But as I said, Till Death, I was... For the first time, I said, oh, sitcom lighting is softer and not that close up. It's great.
Oh, no, you have seen with all the moms on the show, and that was beautiful, and all the daughters, the mother-daughter dance. And if you can tell us, a little, for people who haven't seen it, a little bit about the talk that you gave at that dance. It was so moving.
Yeah, so my character is this very quirky, I mean, most teenagers who I've spoken to really think I'm a very not nice person because I'm the high school counselor, and the character is quirky. She's odd. She's sort of theatrical and dramatic, but the episodes I did last season was leading up to that. I host this mother-daughter dance, and I keep saying that life is for the living, and no one really knows what I'm talking about. And at this last episode, which I know it was on Hulu because I saw it myself on Hulu, I have this speech at the end of this mother-daughter dance where I kind of drag all the mothers and daughters to this dance, but no one wants to dance, so you can also see me do the chicken dance by myself.
Yeah, that was cute.
But the speech, which I was very surprised, Brenda Hampton, you know, who created Secret Life and was a writer on Blossom, she wrote me this whole speech about the reason that my character is so obsessed with mothers and daughters dancing is that she, you know, wrote this scene where my character's describing that her family survived the Holocaust and was in concentration camps, and one of their greatest memories that kept them alive was imagining that they could once again dance with their mothers. You know, it was written to be about my character's grandmother and her sisters. And, you know, my family, I lost a lot of family in the Holocaust, and my grandparents did escape, and they, you know, came to this country. But I didn't know that, you know, Brenda Hampton was writing this very, you know, emotional, interesting speech into this show. And I also think it's just tremendously interesting, you know, how far we've come that on a teen show, when I'm normally the comedy relief, we can have discussions, you know, about these kind of things. And I think that's what shows that that show is not meant to be sensationalistic, and it's not meant to be, you know, silly and annoying. They're actually trying to bring up things that will make people talk. And so, yeah, it was very interesting and very unexpected.
Yeah, I thought it was beautiful. I was really moved. And, you know, speaking of bringing things up, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, on Blossom, you know, there would be mentions of, like, you know, going to second base or this and that. But this show is, you know, what a change. I mean, sex, which I think is good. I used to be a sex educator. So I'm very, I think it's very important that teens and parents and people are talking about sex.
Yeah, and
it just must be such a difference for you.
Yeah, well, I think, look, I mean, the world has changed. Our
yes,
culture has changed, and television has changed. I mean, I don't think it's a show that is meant for young teenagers. And I do actually have, you know, relatives of mine, cousins, and people who have daughters in this age range, and sons, and they say that they use it as a way to keep their teenager talking.
Oh, that's
and
great.
And once I heard from real people, especially people in my family, that they watch it with their teenagers, and they poke fun at what's funny, and they laugh with them and say, oh, please, are they going to say sex one more time? But they said that at least their kid is opening their mouth and saying, huh, she had sex with him, and that wasn't very nice. And, you know, I think that is interesting.
Yeah,
and
I think
so, too.
The writers
on the show are very, they're responsible people, they're good people, they're family people with kids. They're also, they're entertainers, you know, they're writing a show that is entertaining, but I think there is some interesting stuff to be found there, but I don't recommend, you know, plugging your 12-year-old in front of it and saying, I'll see you in an hour, you know?
No. I wouldn't either. You know, and I was a huge fan of Blossom. Now, this is kind of a funny question, but I don't remember. Did Blossom ever go all the way with, was his name Vinny? Was
that with Vinny.
Did they? I couldn't remember if they...
I think there was an episode where, like, he spends the night, but the discussion is there. I don't think that... I don't think we had Blossom go, quote, all the way.
Oh, okay. Well, you must be having fun. You know, I mean, your family life is so rich, obviously, and this seems really like a great thing that you're doing, so.
Yeah, it's a lot to balance, and I'm very grateful, you know, that I have a husband who just finished his degree and,
great.
You know, is home with the boys when I'm working. And when I work, it's really for often a couple hours here, a couple hours there. You know, people are shocked to hear that a career in neuroscience would be much more difficult to work around than...
Yeah, that's a whole nother thing. That's fascinating.
Yeah, and I teach two homeschool classes. I teach a neuroscience class for 9 to 13-year-olds, and I teach a Hebrew school class for the same age range. So my older son comes with me to that, and he plays, and he listens while I teach. So, you know, life is busy, but that's kind of what it looks like. So.
Now, I probably pronounced it wrong, but in the introduction, I mentioned Prader-Willi. Is that how you say it?
Prader-Willi.
Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about that? I don't really know much about that.
Yeah, Prader-Willi syndrome is a genetic syndrome. It affects about 1 in 10 or 15,000 live births. And it's a syndrome with pretty much dysfunction of the hypothalamus, which is a really important part of the brain.
Yes.
And I specifically studied the hormones of the hypothalamus and obsessive-compulsive disorder. In this population. I studied oxytocin and vasopressin, which are also attachment hormones. And so that's where a lot of my kind of research about child development and specifically labor and birth and nursing comes from, that my specialization was those hormones, which also govern some of the behaviors in this syndrome.
Wow. Well, I would love to have you come back on the show sometime and talk about that and bring attention
Thank
to
you.
That.
Yeah, there's a couple of wonderful organizations. There's the Foundation for Prader-Willi Research and the Prader-Willi Syndrome Association of the U.S. And, you know, it's a very difficult syndrome, but, you know, lives are much more improved now with all the research that's been done. And, yeah, it's a very interesting syndrome and a really interesting community of patients.
Oh, that's good. Well, Mayim, this has been fantastic. And if there's anything
you
want to add, you know, this has been so interesting.
No, I think I've talked everybody's ear off enough.
No, this is why you are so great. And if you're ever, tell us about some of your upcoming events. You're coming to Boston, I believe.
I'm coming to Boston for the Back to Basics Expo. I'm going to be speaking at the University of Binghamton for a bunch of students in April, and then I'm speaking in Livingston, New Jersey at their mikveh event in that community. So I'm actually also doing an autograph signing at the Chiller Convention in New Jersey. April, I think it's April 17th, I want to say. But yeah, I'm going to post it. I have a Facebook page, which is the official Mayim Bialik page.
Great.
And I have a small website that I'm working on, which is mayimbialik.net.
Oh, cool.
So so I post stuff on there. And I actually run my own Facebook page, which, Lisa, you can attest to, because that's how you and I met.
Yes, which is wonderful.
So I actually do run my own page, and I try and, you know, answer everything. And it's a really fun way to be in touch with fans and with people who I didn't get to, you know, have access to this way, and people couldn't have access to, you know, to me this way.
Thank you so much. Lisa. And if people want to contact me, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org. I hope everyone has a terrific day.